I'm a nut for time travel stories. Does anybody else like time travel stories, going back in time, going forward? Good job, guys. I love time travel. I don't know exactly what it is. It's not like I have like a whole lot of regret. I have an idea. I don't know. I'm fascinated with the idea of going back in time, especially back in time, and observing things. I like reading history, I think, for that reason, and especially sort of historical novels like Killer Angels, Jeff Scharr. I mean, I know a lot, I've read a lot about Gettysburg, but I like the sort of the historical novels, so I get a flavor. I don't know about how you are, but I enjoy especially going back and understanding how things happen that where we arrived. I'm probably more interested in going back in time than I am in going forward in time, right? I don't want to have anything to do with going forward in time and finding out something that's going to happen that I can't change. How about you? Huh? I don't want to have anything to do with that. It's almost like a prison that I would find out. So I'm less inclined to think about time travel going forward. But this time travel going backward to understand more fully where I am today, isn't that the thing we say about history, right? Those who don't understand their past are condemned to what? Yeah. It's kind of like that future that you can't change, sort of in reverse. You better be prepared for a lot of reversals today. I'm not sure I'm up to the challenge, but I got to tell you about this book called The Arrow of Time that I just read. I was really intrigued about it. I found it through BookBub, which is this little email thing that tells me about books that are on special at Amazon usually. So I got it for $2. I was like, yeah. And it's a great, I don't know, it's a great premise. Here's the premise. A Nazi war criminal who is hiding in America dies in our time now. And then that's where the book begins. And what happens is the narrator, who is not this Nazi war criminal, but it was in his head, then begins living this guy's life backwards. But not living it, just observing it, watching it through this guy's eyes. If this guy doesn't look in a mirror, he doesn't see in a mirror. Now, to understand the story fully, you've got to understand they're going backwards. Everything is backwards. They walk backwards. So if I were going to kind of reverse my walking up to the altar, right, I'd do that, and then I would get up and remember when I came in the church and said it's 10 o'clock? So that's the first thing. And when they're doing that, one of the things that the narrator observed is they're always looking back to where they've been and never where they're going. But that's kind of weird, isn't it? Because that is where they're going, where they're looking. But it's an interesting concept to think about. I mean, the book and the story and the dream, if you will, becomes kind of a metaphor for the way we live our lives. At one point, he's talking about a car, and he says, you know, they're doing the car thing as well. And he goes, why 5 reverse gears and only 1 gear for forward? Do you follow? All right, are you with me? It's a little weird. You have to get used to it. The narrator had a hard time getting used to it and narrating it for us. But one of the interesting things about this story is it's an invitation to live in the present, to be fully aware of where we are. This kind of constantly moving backwards is the way sometimes we can find ourselves living, isn't it? Looking wistfully back and remaking the past into something it never was. And we never have an appreciation for the kind of the grittiness of the decisions we have to make. You know, we sort of remake the past, don't we? And we don't remember the reality of what was going on. So even when we're looking back, we're not really looking back. And I want to invite you to think about this looking back where we've been. One of the things that this fella who is narrating noticed is that, of course, when the story begins, this guy has a heart attack. And then a little bit later on, he has a real hard time walking around, right? Apparently, though, in the story, just hang in there with me. I think it's worth it. But apparently in the story, the war criminal, right, who's living out this story doesn't have a comprehension of what's happening. He's just living his life backwards, perhaps like many of us do. I digress. At any rate, the narrator inside the story is sort of trapped inside this guy's head, you know, with no ability to control the outcome or to change the outcome or anything. One of the things he notices is he goes, gosh, you know, as time goes on, backwards, this guy gets more mobile, right? He's able to walk around better. He says, it used to take us 30 minutes to get across, you know, the living room. And now we can just bound across the living room. Doesn't this guy know how lucky he is? Do we? Do you? We're not promised any kind of future, are we? You know, each day could be this extraordinary celebration. Not to try to be cynical and think, well, tomorrow, you know, we'll probably have something horrible happen. But no, today, we have this day. It's all we ever have, isn't it? You know, to kind of have this full appreciation for this is the day, how does the psalmist say it? That the Lord has made. You know, Chris gave us a Christmas present that was the angel's greeting to Mary. Hail, favored one. She said, put it up on your mirror every time you see it in the morning. Give God thanks. Not for all that isn't, right, in the past. We're not forever 21, though we might like to be. And, you know, they call that store Forever 21 because 21 is like supposed to be the perfect age. I'm 52. It's not. And I hear your laughter, right? You know, you're 21, you're enjoying it, you're loving life. Stick around. It gets even better, right? Every age, every stage to wake up and to thank God for life, to be grateful, and not just to say it, but to live it, was an invitation that this simple little book, this simple little story gave to me, and I'm giving it to you now. I'll tell you a little story. When I was my previous church, we did some visioning work. I hope you've heard of us talking about the visioning task force, about 24 of us who've been praying and getting together regularly and thinking about the dreams God has for us and a direction that we might go together, right? Has anybody heard about that? You smell the popcorn? That's what that's all about, by the way. It's not a movie we're going to see, right? It's a movie we're going to star in, as a matter of fact. That's what the popcorn smell is all about. We're going to head on downstairs and talk about this vision, these dreams that God has given us. And you better hold on to your hat. It's pretty exciting. Those of us who've been involved in the process, our breath is being taken away. Well, one of the things I learned about visioning at a church is churches have life cycles. I was thinking about drawing this for you, but I think we can picture it. I want you to picture a clock face. Okay? Have you got it? Now, I got to be careful because I got to go backwards. So if my hands are at midnight right now, I'm starting to move, right? This is the minute hand, I guess, and then am I moving correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, this is midnight. This is 6, right? Now turn it upside down. I'm not going to do it. But turn it upside down, right? So that 6 o'clock is up top and midnight's down below. And what you have is an image of the life cycle of a church, any organization really, but especially a church. And there are two things that happen as the clock ticks first, just past the earliest stages in the life of the church, right? Are you with me? We're down at, it's not 12 o'clock, it's 0000, right? When time begins for a church. For us, does anybody remember what that year was? Hard to believe. 1791. I only know that because it's etched in granite beside the door that I enter every... Or is it 1792? I'm a little dyslexic, but I'm close. All right? It's a long time ago. And back then, they didn't even have a building. All they had was a what? A dream. A vision. No building. No committees to go to. Nobody complaining. Oh man, it's another committee meeting to go to. Oh, we got another vote. No! It was all dream. All dream and no substance. okay? And as the clock hands start moving, right, and start moving up to 6 o'clock, are you with me? We got the clock inverted. Everybody with me? I'm seeing some nodding heads and some like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. It's okay. All right, hang with me. As the clock hands are moving, though, right, you start building more of those things that just sort of go along with church. Meetings, buildings. Oh, we got to have a building, so we build a building, right? And then we got to take care of the building, and the toilets are stopped up, and again, and I guess they had like an outdoor Johnny. I don't know how it worked, but, you know, then maybe we're moving, and then as the clock hands move, you get less and less vision and more stuff. Not unimportant stuff, right? Not unimportant stuff, but it ain't the stuff that makes a church a movement. Okay? And then those clock hands get to 6. And at that point, you're sort of like cooking with Mazzola. All right? I mean, at that point, you got all the things you need, all the stuff you need, and a lot of vision, a lot of fire and spit and polish. Ernie, I'm not going to spit though, I promise. And then what happens from 6 to midnight? Do you already know? Are you with me? Less and less what? Less and less why? Why are we doing this? And more just going through the, what do they say? Emotions. And they say if you wait until the hand gets close to midnight, anything you do will be death for the church. Anything you do. If you do nothing, which is something, the church dies. If you make a change, you revitalize. A lot of times that'll be moving locations or whatever. It's not the same church anymore. Anything you do. When's the time to change? Not midnight. When's the time to change? You already know it. 6, man, when you're at the top of your game. I just left a church that was getting close to midnight. It was hard. It was tough. It felt like an uphill climb for us all. I felt like the bad guy all the time. You know, the emperor's new clothes guys, you know, raising his arms and everything. It's like, hey, we're going backwards. Let's look a little bit over here. Let's be thankful and grateful for what is. Look at what we have. All the time, you know, we'd show up and we'd have these fellowship dinners and somebody would always say, you know what they'd say, don't you? Well, not like 50 years ago. Man, we just packed this place out. Used to have buses carrying the kids. Where are those buses now? Gone. We couldn't do anything that was right. Everything was like a funeral every day. It was hard. And you know what I wished? I wished all the time, knowing what I knew then, I thought, I wish I could have been here 25 years ago. I wish I could have been here as a pastor, not at 11 o'clock, but more like, I don't know, maybe 7 o'clock, maybe 8 o'clock, maybe even closer to that 6 o'clock hour, we could have done something. And guess what? God said, okay. And I came to Waco. Do you know where we are? At 6. We got no reason to change a lot of things. I mean, when you're at 6 and you're cooking with Mazzola, right? When you ever heard that phrase or is that freaking you out? You know what I mean, though, when I say it, don't you? All right? When all the pistons are firing, we got some problems. It's not perfect, right? There's no reason to change. You're like, well, I'm kind of getting used to this walking backwards stuff. Let's just do it. It's all right. I'm really good at it. There's no real reason to change. But if you wait until there is, oh, man. It'll be a different kind of operation. We got a time machine here. Do you know what we have? I am so grateful. It's like I got my wish. I told you I'm a time travel nut. And here we are. Here we are. Do we even know it? The second thing this guy said in the book is, I told you that the narrator was inside this guy's head. All he could do was watch through the eyes. Right? And he knew, one of the things this guy did was he had nightmares. They were horrible nightmares. You can imagine, can't you? He was a Nazi war criminal. He was a doctor at Auschwitz. A doctor. You can imagine the operations. And you can probably imagine the horror of the nightmares. And this guy inside his head goes, I know we're going to have to go back there. The nightmares will become what? Real. There's a sense of inevitability. Do you live your life that way? Have you got a sin that you've been struggling with all your life? And you just feel like somebody who's inside your head watching what's going on, not actually doing anything or making the changes? Oh, friends. Not only do we deserve better than that, we have better than that. I read this story in the paper about this guy named Gene. And he had had some bad knocks in life. I mean, you know how it goes. I don't even hardly need to go into the details, right? There was a divorce. He had a job. It wasn't paying well. You know, I mean, it wasn't paying as well as he deserved. So finally, he just quit. And then he was staying in this place they were giving him, and they weren't, you know, charging him any rent for it. He's in New York City, by the way. And then the people who own the building that he lives in, they die, both of them, one after the other. And then the people who now, the children, they say, we'll give you a year. What do you think he did during that year? Nothing. He was just inside his head watching, right? Watching things go by. It was inevitable, right? So then, check this out. They kick him out finally, and he's got a Ford Explorer. The fan belt is broken, so it doesn't actually go anywhere. Isn't that interesting, though? A Ford Explorer. He doesn't do any exploring in it. He just puts a seat down and puts a futon in it. He says, I can stretch out, and he starts living there in the Ford Explorer. This is a true story. The neighbors, of course, you can imagine what they said, can't you? What do you think they said, by the way? It's New York City. You think they called the police? You know, as a matter of fact, they started talking with him. Find out a little bit about his story. They said, we're uncomfortable with this and we'd like to help. And one of them, they took up a collection. They raised $5,000, 10 of them. Do the math. And then they helped him figure out how to get disability, $2,500 a month. Better than the chump change he was getting, collecting little cans and turning them in, right? And then you know what Gene said? They helped him fix the truck. And nobody said this for him. Gene finally lived in his body. And he said, I think I'm going to move back near home, back near where my people are in Wisconsin, where this money will go farther. He took the first step in his own life. And so can we. It might mean you have to do a little exploring in the explorer body that God has given you. Do you know I've been talking about Joshua the whole time? I haven't been talking about this book. Do you get that? God says, I've rolled away your reproach today. This day that I have made. When you hear that word rolled away, what do you think? Because I know what I think. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. And when I hear that rolled away, I think of another stone that got rolled away, don't you? Does anything compare to having your life, your soul, your body, everything in the world saved by Jesus Christ? Does anything compare to that? Does any problem we might have? You know, if we could just wake up every morning and say, thank you for saving my life. I remember a Bible study. I was with Kemp Malone. His name, by the way, is Joshua Kemp Malone. Sorry, I just can't stand it sometimes. It just kills me. Anyway, one of the things that this guy would do is he would meticulously plant things. He was all over the church. He was one of those behind-the-scenes guy. You know him. We got him. We had a group and we had a name for him. What did we call him? The Mice. They were proud of that name, by the way. You don't see them, but they can do a lot of damage. I mean, the good kind of damage. We're hoping to resurrect the mice, by the way. Speaking of mice. Anyway, Kemp was one of those kind of mice. And one of the things I remember him doing is he was planting flowers out in front of the church, and he planted them with a measuring stick. Everything was done just so. Everything was perfect for God. Kemp wasn't perfect, but he was sold out to Christ. And one of the times I was meeting with him in a Bible study, I told you I'm a history nut and I love history, and I'm a Navy guy too, so I love Navy history. And the day I found out that Kemp was on the Lexington in the Battle of Coral Sea, the Bible study stopped. I was like, you were on the Lexington in Coral Sea! If you don't know what that means, I have to tell you about that later. It's a big deal. And he goes, yeah, it was. The Lexington was hit, and a lot of the compartments on the Lexington filled with gas and fumes, and they blew up. And it killed a lot of people. Kemp said he was a gunner's mate, and he walked out of a compartment, we call them in the Navy, where 100 of his buddies were kind of waiting for word for what to do next. And as soon as he walked out, the compartment incinerated. And Kemp told me, he said, from that day forward, my life's not my own. Whatever it takes to have a good sense of that kind of extraordinary gratitude of to whom our lives belong. Do you have that sense? Or are you just walking backwards? A sense of gratitude that animates our lives. This is the promise of this old book, not only about a time long ago, but about our time, this day. And then this sense of inevitability. I haven't been talking about this book that I read. I've been talking about Joshua the whole time. Do you know what the word sacrament means? Does anybody know what that means? You've heard that word before. You've heard us use it before. Sacrament. Here's one, right? The sacrament of the Lord's Supper, a communion that we're about to receive in just a moment. The sacrament. It means an outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual grace. And we Protestants say there's only two. The Catholics say they're... Good job. Seven. The Shakers used to say, there are as many things that are sacramental in this world as there are things in this world. And I think that agrees with Paul, who said, since the beginning of creation, all creation speaks of God's grace. And we're without excuse because it surrounds us. And the psalmist said, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies His handiwork. They don't use words. When we were in the Bible study Wednesday, there was a group that said, we went to the Holy Land. We know about this place, Gilgal. Right? It's just north of the Dead Sea. We went to the Dead Sea. They were talking about that. And I thought, to be in the Holy Land. Do you know that we are? Do we realize? That's what this place is. That's what Camden is. It's holy. Isn't it? Unless you want to live your life going backwards. Maybe we should take off our shoes and recognize, why are we here? Not just Watco, right? But have you thought about like the Methodists here in Camden? What difference do we make? Would we be willing to talk to people in the community of Camden and say, hi, I'm from Watco. Does that mean anything to you? How have we changed your life? Would you be willing to do that? That's why a lot of us are here. A ministry of this church brought us here. Maybe it was angel, what was it called? Angel food when we did that? Yeah? That's why some of us are here right now. So it doesn't have to be a bad thing to ask, but I think it is a good question to ask ourselves, perhaps almost daily, what difference, right, are we making? We who are the Christians, how about that? A modest proposal of peace. The Christians in the community of Camden to lock arms together and to join forces. Can you imagine what that would be? Have you seen the number of churches on this little road right down here? Do you know how many churches are sitting on this road right here? I don't even know the name of the road. There are three. You can walk to them. I have. But I've never gone inside, and I wonder what that might be like. There's an Episcopal church right over here. I mean, you could throw a stone if you got a pretty good arm, and you can hit about 10 of them. What if the Christians, what if we could be a part of a movement that God is just waiting to unleash? Now I get to this vision business. Can you go ahead and pass those out, brother? We got some vision statements I want you to take a look at. And as we're passing them out, I'd like to read what has become for us a mind-blowing and an eye-popping vision of the way God is nourishing us with a sense that we're on holy ground. Can I just invite you into a time of prayer where we're not going to look backwards or walk backwards anymore, but we're looking at what God is doing among us right now. I didn't write this. We did. Let us pray. Christ welcomes us as His disciples who joyfully engage in spiritual growth and Christian action. Christ transforms every member from the inside out, empowering us to identify our spiritual gifts and to fulfill our life mission. We take on the best parts of a healthy family, welcoming others to join and be grafted into a place of physical and emotional safety where we are free to grow in Christ and work out our differences. Like candles on Christmas Eve, we pass on the light of Christ and transform the community of Camden. In our life groups, people live life together, studying the Bible, mentoring one another, and serving the community. Our Vacation Bible School-based children's discipleship formation teachers, we used to call them Sunday school teachers, and volunteers encourage children to understand God's Word and the love of Christ and then pass it on. We partner with the Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, and preschool. These are ministries of Whatcoat, welcoming them in worship and inviting them to connect with our church and serve our community. Communication plays a vital role here at Whatcoat. We publish a weekly newspaper, hard copy and online, sponsor programs on the radio station, The Bridge, and send postcard mailings, emails, and social media updates. There's always something going on. We creatively innovate with forms of dynamic, technologically sophisticated worship that capture the attention of our youth and are also well-grounded on the cornerstones of our faith. We practice an active partnership between our youth and young adults and our older boomers and elders, sharing wisdom with each other, encouragement, and inspiration. Our active, growing youth group is involved with spiritual and service projects. Our music ministry reaches out into the community, fostering goodwill, supporting the cause of Christ, participating in servanthood ministries, and inviting people to passionately pursue Christ. Is this a church you want to be a part of? We minister and counsel the troubled souls we encounter on our path and turn no one away. We take all who are hurting under the shelter of our outstretched wings. Our Simpson Center flows with energy and love. It's become the recovery resource in Kent County. We partner with recovery groups to make more personal connections and to link the higher power with a life-changing relationship to Jesus. We offer before and after school programs in the Simpson Center and in the church, as well as classes on finance for the community. Short-term mission teams stay in the Simpson Center while helping with construction projects for the community. Our church and our facilities have become a focal point for town activities. Every day, our doors are flung wide open. And then the doors and walls disappear as we reach out to where people are in the community in a grassroots way. We are a family that realizes anyone and everyone is our neighbor, particularly the least of these. Anyone who's in need of food, clothing, shelter, a sense of belonging and acceptance and the love of Jesus Christ. We are building a stronger ecumenical church community, improving partnerships and coordination with other local churches so that Christ can leverage each church's strengths for the good of the whole community. We are active in working with other Christians, neighbors, educators, and public servants in addressing community issues. We are a leading Kent County Outreach Volunteer Center. Our purple t-shirts are well known. Here come the helpers. Working for Christ. Let's eat.